Vimal Noray at the Chan Center this Saturday. So, you know, that was really fun to listen to. And do contact us if you're listening, citarts@citr.ca, or tweet me, Facebook me, and I'll give you Asphalt Watches tickets. You want to go see this film? It sounds like it's generated a lot of attention. So check it out. And I'm going to play a song because I just told that story about Shane Amon living with Dan from Destroyer and cleaning the bathroom. So I'm just going to leave you with some Destroyer as we sign off into the night. Now, which song would I like to play? He's got so many good ones, doesn't he? So thanks again for Fun Drive and tuning in. And this is Destroyer with an Actor's Revenge. Come back next week, please, on Wednesday, March 19th. And stay tuned right now for Arts on Air. This is Sarah Lapsley on CITR 101.9 FM. Goodbye.
An actor will seek revenge. I don't know why and I don't know when. There'll be talk, there'll be action. Boys demanding satisfaction from girls. Oh, you'd hate to play a girl. An actor will seek revenge. Too strong, he was weird and he was wrong. A bloodless carpet on, throwing everybody out. The kids twist and shout until the wound fucking wrecks it. Yes, but it's also just another mess. Crime and punishment, no, that's not what I meant. Demanding satisfaction from girls. Oh, you'd hate to be a girl. An actor will seek revenge upon the ones who fed in those ridiculous lines, saying what we really need now is an emotional history of the Lower East Side. Cause it was wild, oh no, here we go again.
Strength, dignity,
respect,
beauty,
self-worth,
safety,
confidence,
choice,
hope.
The Beauty Night Society is a registered charity dedicated to helping marginalized women introduce trust, hope, and self-esteem into their lives.
Through its popular makeover program, the Beauty Night Society has touched the lives of thousands and reintroduced a healthy touch to the lives of vulnerable women throughout British Columbia, creating real life makeovers.
Please visit www.beautynight.org for information on programs and on how to help.
Beauty Night,
because dignity is beautiful.
like I was blind before I met you.
Canadians are being bought and sold. We can no longer ignore this reality. Each of the 27 million human trafficking victims around the globe has a unique story. 80% of victims are women. 50% are children. This is not only a global injustice, but a local reality. It is happening right now in my community. We are asking you to take action today. Visit endexploitation.com. Get informed and take action. British anti-slavery leader William Wilberforce once said, "Having heard all of this, you may choose to look the other way, but you can never say again that you did not know." Only question now is, what will you do? Join us and help eliminate human slavery in Canada.
Atmosphere, boy. Thanks to global warming, the temperature will soon go through the roof, and then we'll have an endless summer.
Why do you want an endless summer, Mr. Krabs?
So I can open my latest money-making venture, the Krusty Pool.
The endless summer does sound fun.
And profitable.
Fun and profitable. Big business does it again.
Unfortunately, for those of us who aren't
from CITR 101.9 FM in Vancouver, this is UBC Arts on Air. I'm your host, Irene Dell. Each week, we feature the ideas and stories of students and staff within the Faculty of Arts at the University of British Columbia. Tonight, Jeff Ricker, MFA student in creative writing and about to have his second young adult novel entitled The Unwanted published on March 18th. Jeff, welcome.
Thank you.
I want to begin with this category, young adult fiction or young adult novels. What does it mean to you? How do you define it?
I think that's a really it's a really tricky thing to define. For me, when I was writing this, I figured that I would approach it as writing something that I would have wanted to read when I was a teenager. So anywhere from that age, you know, 13 to 18 is typically what's categorized as young adult. Of course, there's a lot of room for variation in that range.
If you could rewrite any section of the novel, but from an adult or for adult fiction, can you give an example of how you might do something differently?
And I think it should seem like something that that wouldn't. Wouldn't be different from something you might read as an adult. I tried to look at it through the perspective of someone in that age range. Specifically, I spent a lot of time thinking back to my own experiences when I was a teenager, and the things that were on my mind when I was a teen.
So The Unwanted, though, is your second novel, and your first was called Detours.
That's right.
What did you learn about writing fiction between these two books?
Well, the first book was written for adults, and with that book, I think I learned how to write a book. It wasn't the first book I had written. It was the first book I had successfully completed that I thought was good enough for publication. That book took me about 8 years to write. When it came time to write The Unwanted, I spent about 2.5 years writing it.
Tell me about titles. How do you choose a title?
I don't know if I could quite explain how a title comes to me. Detours happened fairly early. of course, early being maybe about 2 years into the process. The Unwanted I didn't have a title for until closer to the end, and actually my partner was the one who helped a lot with that.
So do these titles just sort of come to you in the middle of the night? I mean, Thackeray tells a story that Vanity Fair, the title occurred to him in a dream, and it was so startling he jumped out of bed and ran around the room for 10 minutes. Up until that point, he had a series of titles. But does a title, do you know when it's the right title?
Pretty much when my publisher says it's the right title.
Well, those publishers have a big hand in these things, don't they?
Well, as well they should, because they're taking almost all the risk.
Well, I understand that you actually have an undergraduate degree in journalism and indeed was a journalist for a number of years. Mm-hmm. Was that the right preparation to become a novelist?
I don't know if there is any one right preparation to become a novelist. I think that with journalism, it taught me to be concise, which maybe not always is the best thing to be when you're writing something like a novel. You don't want to be overly verbose or putting in anything that's unnecessary. But it made me a good editor, I think. If something didn't belong, I didn't really feel any compunction about cutting it out. I was fairly pragmatic about that. If something doesn't belong, it comes out. And I think that I produce pretty clean copy, and that's definitely thanks to my journalism training.
Have you incorporated any of your journalistic experiences, any of your earlier reporting, into either of the two novels?
Most of the time I was a copy editor, so it doesn't really lend to any sort of exciting content.
Okay. Yeah, but here you are in an MFA program at UBC's Fine Creative Writing program itself. So was that necessary? What drew you into academia again?
You know, that's one of the things that you see a lot lately, especially with the publication recently of the book called MFA versus NYC. I don't think that's the right argument or comparison to be making, perhaps. Is it necessary? Perhaps not. Perhaps it is for some people. For me, one of the things that really drew me into an MFA program was the opportunity to spend 2 years devoted to pretty much nothing but my writing. And after having spent 20 years in a career, I realized that is very valuable.
What is the creative writing program doing for you as a novelist?
That's a good question. You know, I went into the creative writing program because, like I said, it would give me 2 years that I could devote almost full time to primarily writing. And one of the really strong things about the program, in my opinion, is that it encourages us to, and in fact requires students to take workshops in a range of genres. So I've taken workshops in fiction, which is my main area of emphasis, but I've also taken workshops in writing for children, graphic novel, and I'm also taking one in radio drama. So it encourages me to think about writing in ways that I might not have done without that encouragement. The other great thing about it is that I'm surrounded by a lot of people who are doing really fantastic writing, both student and faculty, and that can't help but be inspiring.
No, I think the community dimension is pretty critical.
It is. When I was back home in St. Louis, I belonged to a writing group called Writers Under the Arch, and having those weekly meetings with them really helped a lot in my early writing, and still helps. I'll be going back to them when I return home after the program's finished. Writing is often a very solitary pursuit, and that's one of the things that I'm cognizant of, the need to get out of the house, so really the creative writing program forces you to and forces you to do it with other people who are going through the same thing, and that's really very useful.
So what about your process in actually writing? Do you begin with a plot and add characters and then maybe some dialogue, or do you have a different system or no system?
I think probably the system varies for each project. With the first novel, Detours, it started as a short story. When I workshopped the short story, the consensus around the table was pretty much there's more here than is in this story, so it's worth exploring. I already had a set of characters at that point, and then it was a matter of sort of going along for the ride with them and seeing what emerged. In general, I usually start writing by the seat of my pants. It might be a snippet of dialogue. It might be a character. It might be just a very sort of amorphous idea. And with a novel, I'll start writing and write for maybe about 50 pages or so. Then I sort of have enough clay on the wheel to see if there's enough content there that I can make something out of it.
One of the interesting things of The Unwanted is the first person narrative. Why did you select that?
It sort of came naturally. The idea for The Unwanted, I started as a story called The Trouble with Billy, which was in an anthology called Speaking Out, and that was an anthology of YA stories focusing on LGBT youth. That was actually written in third person, from the perspective of each of the three main characters. Once I got to the end of it, I felt like I wanted to do a little bit more with these characters, and Jamie was the one that interested me the most, and he seemed like a natural choice for a protagonist, and I wanted to be close up on him in the writing, and I think writing in first person will often lead towards a reader identifying with that person.
And you feel you get closer to the character. You almost subjectively enter the character?
I think that's exactly what I'm hoping the reader does. Yeah. My first novel was also written in first person. The last version of it was written in first person. The first and second drafts were written in third.
It's a very radical change, though, isn't it? You say to move from third person to first person. How do you feel about doing that? Do you feel elated because now you see that would be the better way to express the character and the situation? Or do you feel depressed because I've done two versions and it's been in third person and now I'm going to start all over again?
That third draft of Detours was a radical change. When I changed it from third person to first person, I lost about a third of the manuscript, and I moved the ending to the beginning. It's one of the common things that you'll hear about writers who are early on in their game, that they'll write their way to the beginning, and that's pretty much what I had done. But it goes back to what's right for the story, and so I decided that first person was right for it, and if that meant that I had to make a big cut, so be it.
Okay, but something we all experience, and perhaps you have too, is rejection. Rejection of your work. How do you handle it?
You know what's funny? I decided not to be a reporter, mainly after I had done a brief stint on a newspaper at my undergrad. And you get to the point where you're calling up people to line up interviews, and after getting hung up on so many times, you get a little tired of it. And so I thought, I really don't want to be a reporter. That wasn't the only reason, but, you know, the rejection was kind of hard, especially when you're 20, 21. So I went into editing, and when it came time to start sending fiction out, I knew rejection was going to be the rule rather than the exception. So the nice thing is that most magazines accept submissions digitally now. So I no longer have the great big pile of rejection letters. They're just somewhere online.
Somewhere online, yeah. Indeed. Well, how did you actually go about getting the two novels published? I mean, do you work with an agent? Did you just send in an outline? Did you send a blind email to publishers that you thought might be interested? What is the process? Young writers always want to know, how did you do it?
I know. I was one of those people who was asking, how do you do this? And you know, of course, the answer is that there is no one way that it gets done. It depends on what you're writing. It depends on where you are seeing it published. Are you working with a? Are you wanting to go to one of the big five publishers? Are you writing something that is more for, like in my case, a niche market? Your decisions, will be based a lot on those factors. At the moment, I don't have an agent. Actually, at the moment, I've never had an agent. That's one of the things I'll be working on after I finish the MFA program. The first two novels got published because of prior publications and professional connections. I had published several short stories in anthologies that had been edited by the man who eventually was my editor for both of these books. I had met up with him as well as several other editors from the publishing company Bold Strokes Books, and I met them at a writing conference that takes place every year in New Orleans, and so that was a wonderful place to make connections with people, and eventually my editor Greg just said, "So tell me about this book you've been talking about," and it sort of went from there. I sent him the first 50 pages. He asked to see the rest of it, and then they wanted to publish it.
It's interesting that publishing, which of course is going through such a transformation, still remains a sort of person-to-person